The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And we like to talk about the number one county. That is, of course, Donegal. Nearly 10 minutes past 10, Wednesday the 30th of August. Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning if you're just after joining us. Thanks to Ali, Jack, Brendan and John for the last hour as we dissect the potential runners and riders, as we know now that Donegal is going to retain the same status. One big constituency of five seats with a little bit of the south of the county in Sligo and also in Leitrim. And thank you so much to so many of you getting involved in the conversation as well. They're talking about Charlie McConnellogue. What about the fishermen? Yeah, well, I think when John was referencing piers and things like that there, that maybe that's... great conversation, Greg, with your guests. Public service broadcasting at its best. Female voices missing, but not your fault. It is something, by the way, that we is a constant endeavour to make sure that as many different voices are represented on the programme. I'm not being defensive, but we do go out of our way to make sure that we strike a balance as much as we can. It's not always possible, though. There was a full house last night in the Mount Errigal Hotel. Aintu had a meeting for parents, teachers, grandparents against this explicit sex education starting in schools. I'm not sure it's... is it explicitness the issue? I think it's more the content of it rather than explicit nature of it, especially in national school. It's just the same silly drawings that I saw in national school. Maybe you're on about secondary school and maybe you're on about some of the other things that they're discussing. I hope Fine Gael... Actually, how many were at that meeting last night, if you were added? I hope Fine Gael get a hammering in the local and general elections. Could nothing, because nothing but hardship for people looking after the big boys as usual. Still, Fianna Fáil know better, they believe. Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael are finished in the general election over mica pyrite plus unemployment. No consultation on young Ukrainians being pushed into every village in Ireland and given more benefits than the Irish, they say. Also, too, a lot of families will have seen their young people having to leave. That's going to be a factor in it all as well, I'm sure. Michael McClafferty to rejoin Fine Gael and stand as a TD. Is that something he'd want to? I wonder. 100% redress and farmers should join up. Well, you see, that is always the danger in that you could split a vote. I mean, even, say, for instance, you know, Sinn Féin have made very strong promises as it relates to defective concrete. Now, whether they follow through on them, that remains to be seen. And it potentially you could end up damaging in running a candidate on that issue alone. You could end up damaging the party, most likely, maybe, to be favourable, as I say, if they follow through on their commitments. But then again, if you have a farmer's candidate, defective concrete, and others, it does dilute the vote that's available, because you'll always get a core of people, I think, that will vote for Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin and Independent, where their seconds and thirds go. But people should never underestimate the fact that both of those parties do retain a core support, and it is not unimaginable. And I've said it long before it was said elsewhere, as far as I've heard, that it's not impossible that the current government could be returned. What about your favourite party? Good friend Aintu's Mary T. Sweeney. Could she be the dark horse in the race for a seat and was only cis woman candidate in 2020? I don't know what cis... I know what the word means. I don't know what is relevant in Mary T. Sweeney's conversation. And Mary T. Sweeney's a woman. I don't think she needs any further clarification beyond that. Mary T. Sweeney, I don't know if you've been ironic in calling Mary T. Sweeney a good friend. Mary T. Sweeney's a regular guest on this show. What about Cora Harvey, says a listener? Yeah, I think they'll need her. What about Marie-Therese for Sinn Féin? She'd be their ideal candidate and Piers could bring her with him on his vote alone. But that is also a possibility, of course. There's a few choice phrases for this lot. Were we not on the radio? Sure, why change a winning formula, Greg? Could the reason be for no boundary change for Donegal that two three-seaters would result in four Sinn Féin TDs in the next general election? Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael coalition couldn't have it. I mean, that is why if Sinn Féin members might feel a bit aggrieved, because I think really they would have done very well. I would love to see the submissions, and I'm going to find out to see if they're public or not, just to find out who thought what and where. I have to say, what a shams of a government we have running our home country. If the family budget was spent in the exact same manner as our elected personnel, whom give us assurances at every opportunity within the media and at our front doors that they could take care of all our personal needs, we definitely need our heads looked at. Morning, Greg. More jobs for the boys and gals in political circles under the guise of a need for more representation in the Dáil. If the UK adopted the same population TD ratio as here, there would be well over 2,000 MPs in Westminster as opposed to 650. Just another bill for hard-pressed taxpayers. Again, I don't know why we didn't look at the one TD for every 30,000. I mean, it seems OTT. A caller says there have been campaigns for years to reduce the number of representatives we have, yet here we are with more. These boys really are looking after themselves. This country is a shocking disgrace. Another, what happened to the number of MEPs' decisions being made? What a waste of resources revisiting this instead of doing it all at once. There were recommendations on the MEPs made as well, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's as you were. There's an extra seat going. They don't know where it's going to go yet. Maybe that's the thing that they have to revisit that you're referencing, so my apologies if I missed that. Good morning, Greg. So much for changes in RTE. Whoever is responsible for commissioning a show by Keith Duffy on Teeth needs sacking ASAP. What a waste of taxpayers' money. Well, I saw that yesterday and I thought, well, you know what? They must just think we are suckers. Keith Duffy going to Turkey to get his teeth done, and it's going to be like a numerous part TV show. Like, why don't they go and make a programme with, I don't know who it is, what about that Dave Duke on iRadio or someone like that there, someone who's young and from the West, the county, or I'm sure Midwest, or there's David James here, or whomever it might be. You know, make programmes, try it with different people outside of Dublin, talented young people that are popular in their local areas. You know, why aren't they investing in them and giving people like that a chance? I don't know. They won't risk it, but they should. And anytime they do anything, it has to be really edgy comedy or something. You know, but there's some fantastic people working and operating on the West Coast, and back them. Give them a chance to make a show or what have you. Anyway, enough of that. Let's get to the bingo numbers. Right, Cathy O'Connor is founder and secretary of Blood Bikes Northwest and is with us in studio. And I'm delighted to welcome you in. Cathy, how are you getting on?
Good morning. I'm getting on good. And I would be co-founder.
Okay, yes, no problem.
Because there was a few of us at the beginning, excellent. So
well,
I wasn't on my own.
Them.
I was amongst them.
And we're talking about the launch of a new blood bike, but I think it's just an opportunity, if you don't mind, to talk about the work of Blood Bikes Northwest, because it's one of those organisations, and I think with a few different things, you know, there's more awareness of what you guys do, but I don't think there's enough, because it's the type of service that you only really sort of start appreciating and understanding when you have to avail of it.
Absolutely, yes.
So talk to us about why you co-founded Blood Bikes Northwest. How long ago and what work do you do?
Well, this is our 10th anniversary. Okay, so how it started was a guy called Bernard McDyer, who is also a co-founder, asked a couple of people together to an open night, okay, and he introduced a video of Blood Bikes in England. Mm-hmm. And at that meeting, we formed a committee, and we've been running since, basically. So what we are is we're an emergency out of our service for the HSE. We run from 7 p.m. in the evening to 7 a.m. in the morning. So we have 15 volunteer riders,
yes.
Okay, all RASPA trained, which is advanced training. So, and we're quite active.
And what kind of work do you do? Is it all blood or?
Okay. Yeah, we do a variety of things. We do blood samples. We can do x-rays. We can do letters. One of our big ones, I suppose, we worked all through COVID as well, would be breast milk.
Mm.
We get breast milk from the centre in Enniskillen, which is the only centre in Ireland that provides breast milk. We can also collect breast milk from one home, bring it to another, or bring it to a hospital. So we have a variety of purposes. Yeah.
And the advantage in terms of time and what the door-to-door, how important is that?
Absolutely.
So could you give us a maybe a typical example of a scenario where you guys kick in and the impact it has?
Absolutely. Well, just before I forget, we also have done in the past, we've collected chemo medication and delivered it to people in their homes. Mm. So what, you know, we'll get a call, say, maybe at about 5 o'clock in the evening, okay, for a rider to go about 7 o'clock to collect from the hospital. So what they would do then is they would go to the lab in the hospital, collect whatever is needed to be collected. We link up with two other blood bikes, Blood Bike East in Dublin and Blood Bike West, and also Cúchulainn down in the Midlands. So if we were to get a call to Dublin, we would go as far as Auchnacloy, meet up with Blood Bike East or West there, hand over whatever, and they take it the rest of the way. If we were going to Galway, we would go as far as Tubbercurry and meet up with another, most likely Cúchulainn there, hand over whatever it is, and then they take it the rest of the way.
So it's brilliant, isn't it? It's remarkable, the work that is done. And talk to us about the type of people that volunteer and work with Blood Bikes Northwest. Yeah, well, who are they?
Yeah, they're bikers, ordinary bikers. And the thing about
are you up here on a bike? Is I'm that your bike I can see on the monitor up
that's
there?
That's my bike out there. I don't ride the Blood Bike though.
No, but
I have short leg syndrome. So my legs do be dangling. No, but I am a biker.
Yeah.
I do some runs. I kick in if nobody else can do it. But we also have a van. So we have two bikes. We are unveiling our newest bike on Sunday. So we have a ride out on Sunday, and that's celebrating our 10th anniversary. We're meeting at Snugborough. Okay, heading off at about 11:30 and coming back for about 3 or 4. So we're leaving at Snugborough and coming back. We've named the bike Noah because we were a beneficiary of the Noah Bed Push.
Mm-hmm.
And Noah will be there for the unveiling of the bike on Sunday morning.
And people know Noah is our good friend Lee Gooch's beautiful son.
Yes,
and that was a remarkable event, Noah's Bed Push.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, we have other sponsors, so when you start mentioning one, it can be difficult, okay? Optum would be an ongoing sponsor. We had Bluebird Care at the beginning. So we depend totally on volunteers. Our bikers are just ordinary guys. Most of them are working. So say it's an evening service and a weekend service. So we're giving something back. I suppose that's
exactly.
we're giving something back to the community.
And so the new bike, because you were one of the benefiters of Noah's Bed Push, will be called Noah.
Yes.
And you mentioned too, Noah is also going to be an honorary member of Blood Bikes. And Noah and Lee are going to be at the morning
to
help launch.
Absolutely, yeah, indeed. Brilliant. So, yeah, thank you for reminding me about that because I nearly forgot that, yes, we're making Noah an honorary member of Blood Bikes Northwest.
So what is your relationship with the HSC? Because, I mean, nothing like this existed before you existed, okay? So the HSC then is a big government-funded organisation. How did that relationship be established? Because there's lots of checks and balances and things that have to be adhered to and followed. And because obviously then they're in a way culpable themselves because they're engaged in this service. So it's not just like, oh yeah, there it is, hop it in the bike and away you go. Like, you have lots of hoops to have jumped through and
absolutely,
all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. It was slow. It was a very, very slow process. So it was building up trust, building up the idea into introducing meetings. At the beginning, a lot of meetings just to build up the idea of what we're about. So now we have quite a good relationship with the HSC. It took, I would say, maybe the first 2 years, even three, for them to fully get what we were about. But we insisted on being there, you know, sort of.
And we had to cut through a lot of red tape too, I imagine. Say, well, this is how it'll, you know, it seems crazy that you'd have to sort of argue as to the benefits of it and how it can be done and logistics.
But yous
were so determined.
We were determined.
Yeah.
You know, we could see the benefits of the service. So we actually save the HSC money.
Oh, for sure.
No, we don't get any funding from anybody in particular. All of our monies is donations from some of the businesses, from people. You know, we had a football match in Milford, I think it was, there last week, and they donated to us. Some of the bike runs, you know, the Devil's Disciples and them, they donate to us, so we're...
The devil's
disciples.
I know it's biking.
They're a great bunch.
And here we have a check from the devil's disciples.
Absolutely.
I know, but that's how it works, isn't it? So, and it's a cool name as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and fair play to the businesses too, that you can sort of rely on for... It's a fantastic thing for a business to be involved in sponsoring,
absolutely,
I think.
Absolutely, yeah,
you know, yeah. Okay. And of course, from our own perspective here, we're delighted that... obviously, Lee and Noah are going to be there in the morning. The bike's going to be named Noah. And he's also now going to be an honorary member of Blood Bikes. But as you say, this is a lovely thing for the Gooch family. But it doesn't take away from all that everybody else's contributes.
Absolutely.
No one would see it that way in any way, of course.
Yeah.
Right, so the 15 volunteers. Sorry, I did ask you and then I got waylaid. It wasn't your fault. So they're just like... bike enthusiasts.
They're just bike enthusiasts, signed up, okay, give their of their time. There's quite a number of us that have been there from day one.
Yes.
That's it, you know. We've new bikers have come on in the last couple of years. They're inclined to stay. Okay. Now, we did lose a co-founder there last week. He had actually left Blood Bikes, but he'd been with us for quite a number of years and he passed away. So we miss him,
be to the forefront of all your minds through this event and through the whole 10th anniversary year, of course.
Yes.
That's an awful loss for you as well.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But what a contribution and legacy to leave.
Yeah.
Okay.
People hang in, you know, they're good to give of their time. And it is about giving back. And there's something in that when you're giving back like that, there's a very good feel-good factor, you know. Mm-hmm. And the guys, they give up. I mean, they work and they come in the evening and they may end up going down to Tubbercurry or may end up going to Auchnacloy. They never complain.
Yeah.
Never, ever complain. You know.
All right, brilliant stuff. So the launch of the new Blood Bike will take place on Sunday, the 3rd of September, and the weather's looking good for it as well, which always helps, doesn't it? It's
there's a high coming in.
The Snugborough Restaurant, Letterkenny. To celebrate, there's a ride out, so anyone who loves machinery is going to love that as well.
Yes.
Registration will take place from 10 a.m. until 10:30 a.m. Leaving Snugborough Restaurant at 11:30 a.m. This is also the 10th year anniversary, of course, of Blood Bikes Northwest. Yeah. Of course, Blood Bikes Northwest were one of the benefactors of Noah's Bed Push. With that money and other supporters, they've been able to buy a brand new bike, and the bike's going to be named after our great friend Noah. And Noah's also going to become an honorary member of Blood Bikes. And Noah and Lee Gooch will be... Don't give Lee Gooch a microphone, whatever you do, will you not? Like, just let him stand around and wonder at
it. Absolutely. Just, be a spectator.
So Noah and Lee will be there for the launch. And fair play. I think he's doing amazing. I think he's doing amazing stuff.
Oh, thank you.
And I think it's great that he's... people know who you always did, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
not just those that are directly affected.
Yeah.
Okay, Kathy, anything else that you wish to add?
No, I think that's us, you know.
Come along and have fun and see all the brilliant
absolutely,
bikes.
Absolutely, yeah. And as I say, no, it's £15. Bikers are great, you know, when it comes to charity, because, you know, it's a charity run. It's £15 to go in the run.
Yeah.
Okay, and they are good. And Snugborough are putting on food at the end. Okay, just sandwiches and that for when the bikers, when they come back. So just wish us well and safe riding.
Yes, of course. And it's going to be early enough on Sunday too, so you can go along and enjoy it and then get on with your rest of your day as well.
Absolutely.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Kathy, having you in. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much
and
for having me.
A big thanks to everyone involved in it, the co-founders and the 15 voluntary riders that do amazing life-saving work for the people. So thanks so much indeed.
Thank you. Real pleasure.
Okay, Kathy O'Connor there, founder and secretary of Blood Bikes Northwest. You're welcome back to your 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. And obviously, it's great to have you listening, but more and more of you, and it's great to see. And I think maybe it's because the house is a little bit quieter, more of you are choosing to watch the show as well. And I'll just remind you, if you don't mind, you can watch the programme on YouTube. Now, that's on your smart TV. Most people, I think, if they've bought a TV recently, it's a smart TV. The YouTube app will be on it. Or on your Fire Stick, you can either have it on it or it's downloaded onto it anyway. You can watch the show, Highland Radio Ireland, and you can do so on your phone, laptop, tablet as well. We're also on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. So, as I say, another way for you to consume the show. We really appreciate it. Hedge cutting season getting close and a lot of dangerous stretches all over, especially minor and secondary roads, which need addressing. But a lot of hedges have already been cut. I'm not sure. I think you can still cut hedges, can you, if it's in the interests of the road safety? Sign of light, line of sights, and all that kind of stuff. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I saw quite a bit of hedges being quite a few hedges being cut. I'm not going to lie to you, but anyway. Right, okay. We learned yesterday evening the shocking news that another tragedy has visited the beautiful county of Tipperary. An Garda Síochána confirmed that they and emergency services had to attend the scene of a fatal road traffic collision that occurred outside Cashel, County Tipperary. It was a single vehicle collision which occurred shortly before 9 p.m. when a car hit a wall in the Windmill Knockbullogue area of Cashel, County Tipperary. Councillor Declan Burgess is Cathaoirleach of the Cashel, Cahir, Tipperary Municipal District. And I mean this in the most earnest way possible, Declan. We are all thinking on you from across the Northwest. As you would know, we've had tragedy visit us on far too many occasions across the Northwest and in Donegal, and we can really empathise and understand what you're going through. But another tragedy like this so soon after the most recent one, it's almost too much for us to bear, isn't it, Declan?
It is too much, and the community of Cashel is numb, pure numb at the moment. This is heartbreaking news, especially following the awful tragedy in Clonmel, where four young people, you know, passed away there due to a road accident as well. It's an awful blow. To be struck again in just a couple of days is so upsetting. You know, Clonmel and Cashel are very close, only about 25 minutes away from each other. So that tragedy was our tragedy, and this tragedy is now their tragedy, and it's upsetting, and it's a very difficult situation, especially when a child was involved. And our community feels this at the moment, and just on behalf of the town of Cashel and its people, I want to express my deepest sympathies and condolences to the family involved in this road accident. But I also want to thank, you know, our first responders. They were brilliant, and our entire emergency services team for their work. It wasn't a simple task. It wasn't an easy task. You know, so they have to be remembered. But also, I'm thinking of the residents in the Windmill Knockbullogue area, just outside of the town of Cashel, you know, who were forced out of their homes, who dealt with the situation in the aftermath of this tragedy, and you know, their assistance is very much appreciated. Well, it's hard to comprehend.
It is.
And we're trying to navigate through it.
Of course, and so many people so personally affected, just as you outlined there. Declan, did you know? Do you know the family and those who very sadly lost their lives?
They're a local family, well known to the community, well established in the community, which makes it all the worse. It's so disheartening, and it's heartbreaking news. And you know, Cashel will respond and be there for the community. And you know, three people have lost their lives, you know, as a result of this collision. It's a situation we didn't expect to be in so soon after Clonmel's incident.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I won't delay you any further, Declan, but just again to reiterate that we are all thinking of you, and these awful tragedies have felt far beyond the borders of your county. Yeah. And we wish you all the strength needed over the next while to deal with yet another awful situation.
Yeah. Thank you for those thoughts.
Okay. Councillor Declan Burgess there, who's Cathaoirleach of Cashel, Cahir, Tipperary Municipal District. And you know, when the email arrived in my inbox yesterday, it read so similar to the email we received just before we learned of the awful passing of those four teenagers. And I was reading down the email, and I saw Tipperary, and I thought the Gardaí have accidentally reissued the same email again. I thought, there's no way possible, is there, surely, that we could have another awful incident like this in the same county so soon afterwards, with multiple deaths, a number of deaths as it was described at the time, in a road traffic collision. And then the worst fears became a reality, because then you could see that it was different town lands and just absolutely awful. A beautiful young toddler and their grandparents, both in their 40s, and the parents of the toddler, the family of the grandparents in the back, mother and father of the toddler in the front, one seriously injured, the other less seriously injured, but they have so much to deal with as well. It's just really, really difficult, isn't it? Right, okay. Greg, who will you vote for when the time comes? I don't know how to answer that question, honestly, because how do I answer that? I don't want to discourage anyone from voting, but I didn't the last time or the time before, if the truth be told. What about John O'Donnell? He's your man. I'm not sure if he's running or not, or how he might run or not. He's made no announcement at this point. Why don't they go and make a documentary on the consequences of having tummy tucks in Turkey and the risks involved? Why are these programs created for vanity? It's an interesting angle, that, actually. It really is. How funny, funny how the war is to blame for high energy prices, but look who's paying the latest. Who's paying the least? It's Ukraine. They're paying the least. In the war was responsible because obviously gas and what have you was taken from Russia. Ukraine pays the lowest, just in case that caller thinks I've brushed over that. But the wholesale prices are much lower now, and we're still paying through our ears. It's crazy. Now, we had contact from a listener that says, Greg, I have serious issues with how long it takes to hold an inquest into someone's death in Donegal. These delays cause a lot of issues for families. Can anyone explain why it's taking so long? Families are grieving and the inquest hanging over them is taking too long. I have an inquest coming up for a family relative, so I have attended one or two to know what to expect. Sometimes there are four or seven held on one day. How is that fair? I suppose it's only an issue when you have one personally. I strongly feel more questioning of the delays needs to happen than when they are held. No explanation for the delay is given. Now, of course, we're very lucky in that we can invite Dr. Dennis McCauley onto the programme, and he might accept to, and he does accept, sorry, to address this directly. Because obviously no one wants to see any family going through any extra difficulty in their grief. So Dr. Dennis McCauley, GP in Stranraer. I mean, do you recognise sort of the comments from a listener there? I'm sure those views are expressed from time to time.
Oh, I do. I think that the coroner is, I'm the county coroner, and we're not here to talk about specific cases, but just to explain about the whole process. A coroner is, just to give a background to your listeners, the coroner is an independent judicial officer who investigates sudden deaths, and particularly those that are violent and unnatural. And I think that the vast majority of times the coroner is contacted when there's a sudden death, and the GP or the and Garda Síochána will be present when a sudden death occurs. And we're, first of all, the first screening process we would go through is there anything unnatural here? And that will always form part of the investigation anyway. But more importantly, the only legal duty the coroner has after he's investigated the death is to be able to ensure that a death cert is issued so that a person can be buried. But between that, there's a lot of investigation that actually takes place. So in the vast majority of cases, there's a sudden death, we will contact, the guard will be present, and we'll contact the GP to see if they're aware of as to the cause of death. And if that is the case, a death cert is issued. Occasionally, the GP will say, I actually don't know why this person died, so we have to do a post-mortem. And once again, the vast majority of those cases, the post-mortem comes back, and we then are, I'm allowed to give a coroner cert, which will allow a death cert to be issued. In certain special circumstances, an inquest is necessary by law. And an inquest is it is when people come to an inquest, we try and make it as respectful and as family focused as we can. But it's a very daunting thing. It generally takes place in the courthouse. there are Garda members present. You take an oath when you give evidence and stuff. So it's very daunting. People who are very sensible, practical people, they've come out of an inquest and said, that was very harrowing. And so that is the context of that. Now, along that journey, there are delays. And the biggest delay, unfortunately, that most people will encounter is the time it takes from when we do a post-mortem to get the actual full result back. And that can take up as long as 6 months. Now, that's an extraordinary time. And the reason for that is, in all deaths, we will do a toxicology analysis to see what medicines the patient may or drugs the patient may or may not have taken. And the major delay is that the toxicology being sent to the state lab can take 4 to 6 months to come back. And that is too long. It's something that we've advocated since I started as a coroner. The state lab meet us regularly and say, listen, workload-wise, this is the quickest that we can turn it around. So that's the first roadblock that comes for a patient. And now patients, then you'll ask, do we have to do a toxicology in every case? Yes, we do. Because at an inquest, it's quite annoying for families. They'll say, well, my relative was taking medicines. Was he actually taking them or was he not? Without toxicology, we can't say that. And then as well, did he take too much of his medicines? You know, then that contributes to his death. Without toxicology, we would never know that. So it's a uniquely important part of the investigation. So that delays things. Then when we have that back, we then asked members of Garda Síochána who work with me. They are my agents, as it were. And then sometimes it can take quite a while for an inquest file to be generated, and that involves meeting people, taking statements, getting them prepared. So yes, there is a delay, and those are the major things. Now, the third factor was COVID. During COVID, there was a recommendation that inquests didn't take place. So there is a delay in that. Now we're working through that, and I must admit that I'm as up to date as I can be. I have very few cases that are sitting on my desk that have to be done, but there will always be situations where we have to adjourn because of some issue or that. So that's the major journey that when a sudden death occurs, what can happen.
And there can be no corners cut because given the process and the sensitivity of it and the expectations of all the parties involved, the process has to be followed and the right people have to be available at the right time and have the certain amount of work done. There's a lot of moving parts.
There are, and occasionally we can circumvent it in situations where there is not much contention, and we can have what's known as a documentary inquest, where with the approval of the family, a member of Garda Síochána, the pathologist, and myself will meet in the court. There'll be nobody else there, and we can expedite something if there is a rush. But an inquest is a really unique thing. It is held in the courthouse, but it's completely, there is no parties, there's nobody making any accusations. We come together so that we can hear all the information about a death. We could hear, Greg, that you put an axe through Dennis McCauley's chest and I died as a result of the bleeding from that. But I could never say that you killed me. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a situation where we just, every bit of information we have about a death, we will talk about that in an inquest.
Now, and what's the importance of doing that in public, Dennis? Because obviously anyone, including the press, can turn up at these inquests, and at times you do see reports on an inquest. I'm not sure that would be terribly welcomed by the families. I don't know the ins and outs of that. But like, it's obviously a requirement that it has to be held in public, and that means people can attend.
Anybody can attend any inquest. Now, there's natural caveats to that, in that I think the families who are grieving and are coming to hear very personal information about their loved one's death, they are naturally, like, really anybody in Donegal could come into that inquest. Nobody can be barred from actually coming in. Now, naturally, it's the press that causes the biggest contention. Once again, they are entitled to be there. It is then up to their editor to decide, is there enough public interest to actually discuss this? And I can't stop press coming in. Now, the one caveat I will say that is we have an understanding when there is a case that there's it is a probable suicide, that that's not reported. Now, if it was a very contentious suicide, if it was somebody that went above a certain level, I would say that in those cases, there could be a situation where it would be reported. I can think of two or three that they were reported because of their uniqueness. But generally, we will have days where we will have cases which could end up to being probable suicides that we inform the press that they really shouldn't be there that day. And they're very reasonable in those regards. But I think it's the presence of the press that is the most contentious issue.
Yeah, well, that's what we're getting the message.
Out of my hands, really.
Yeah, that's what we're getting messages on here, a number of them. I'll just read one example. Can you ask for the press not to report on cases in the coroner's court? We had a personal family case and it was all over the local and national news. Do we as family have a right to ask for no press? Well, I presume anyone has a right to ask for no press, and you can appeal to editors not to, but you can't prevent them from doing so. You can only sort of really appeal to their better judgment, but they can't be compelled not to report on something, presumably.
No, they can be. I think what you can do is you can't bar them from the court, but you can. There have been situations where family have approached the press, and I think it is. It's a very difficult. It's a balance that the editor, the news editors, have to actually have, and it's something that it's really out of the coroner's gambit. In that anybody is entitled to come into this to the case. There are press members there. Families are naturally uniquely upset that the situation can come into the press. Some families, because of the nature of the deaths, are actually quite happy with that because they want people to learn from that particular event.
Understood.
But no, it is something that is out of my control, and it is a situation that it is very much the news editor who decides what is of public interest or rather than what is interesting to the public. And I think that's a journalism
but
question.
But there's a responsibility also on how it's reported as well, because you are giving every element of information. And to pick a piece out of that, sometimes you see that in reports and you think, well, you know, that's sensationalising an element of what is quite a thorough process. Another caller says, we had to wait 5.5 years for an inquest after my brother's road traffic death. It was really hard waiting on the inquest for so long. Is that's not typical, or is it? How long might someone, like, what would lead to a situation?
I think that there are at times two parallel processes taking place. If there's a death and there's a coroner's investigation, but from that, if there's also a parallel criminal investigation. If there's a criminal investigation, I cannot take any. Yeah. I can't get involved until after that, because the worry would be that if a coroner's case took place and some information was disclosed that could affect a criminal investigation. So in cases where there is quite a lengthy delay. As I say, each individual case I wouldn't discuss. It is because there are criminal investigations taking place. You know, there are a number of famous ones which are still pending because criminal investigations are actually taking place. And we are unique. It is just very good coronial practice not to get involved in those cases until the criminal matter has come to a conclusion.
A person is waiting on personal belongings back from a coroner, waiting a couple of years. Is that unusual? What's the situation there? Again, it's not an individual case, I'm sure.
Yes, and the thing is that, once again, we try very hard. Once again, if there's a criminal matter, they generally will retain. And I think that personal items, I think that the saddest thing generally is notes left by someone before they died. And I think that is an evidential matter. It used to be the situation that one didn't see things until the day of the inquest. I think that has changed. All coroners will try and meet families regularly and keep them informed as to what is there. But generally things like, a car or something or a piece of machinery, they sometimes are part of the investigation, and really, just in case a person said, well, I disagree with this, I would rather have that car checked myself. If the car has gone or the piece of machinery has gone. Now, when it comes to personal items, we generally will review each item individually and say, well, really, this is no benefit. This is no bearing on the inquest, and we try and release those pieces of information or pieces of clothing and things such as that before the inquest takes place.
And I think this is an example of what you were talking about. A caller's family member died in 2022 and awaiting an inquest into the death. She's been advised that she needs to hear back from the Gardaí first before it can take place, but it's not happened. Is this the case, or what's the normal procedure, and how long does it normally take? I don't think there's a normal here, but obviously you are unable to progress what you have to do in these such cases, not this individual case, until the Gardaí are satisfied from their perspective. And this caller needs to just... Is it normal procedure? You've already outlined that, yes, it is. How long does it normally take? That I presume there's no way one could put a figure on that, because we've got investigations that can take days or weeks and others that can take months and into years, Dennis.
They are, yes. And I think it's delays with the guards, even with our office. We'll try and keep people informed, because it is very frustrating. And I think the biggest frustration is, the first frustration for the vast majority of people is the postmortem, because thankfully only a small proportion of postmortems will eventually go to an inquest. And I think that is the part that there is always the coroner's delays. And I think, yeah, there are. That's a fact. I think just the explanation of them isn't always as clear. And one of the issues is the toxicology issue, which is so necessary, but it is frustrating that it takes so long. But I don't think it's any laxity at the lab. I think it's just an actual resource element. They would say that they are inundated. Like, acute crime issues probably take precedence over a coroner sample. I can understand that. I think the families, you know, each family though is just uniquely grieving, exactly. And they wish to get as much information as quickly as they can, and I can understand their frustration.
Look, obviously this conversation was off the back of one query from a listener, but I think it's been really informative in the process, and especially to the role of an inquest and the coroner and an investigation and the Gardaí and the relationship between them and how it can... one can not delay, but one has to follow the other and so on and so forth. So Dennis, as always, listen, it's brilliant to be able to get that level of access to the county coroner and to get those matters cleared up. Obviously, it's not going to be to the satisfaction of everyone, but greatly appreciated nonetheless. Dr. Dennis McCauley, who is a GP in Stranooler and, of course, county coroner as well. A caller says, I had a personal case of my husband, and I contacted all the press directly, and they were very understanding and did not report it because I didn't want my kids to see it on social media. All were true to the word and did not report it. So that's fair play to those. Greg, it's the same with cases of murder or rape. It can take years for them to come to court. We are only a small country. This should be held a lot quicker, especially for families. In Britain, many of these cases are held within months. Families need closure more quickly.